Welcome to the Startup Showcase. I'm your host, Scott Catoon, and this is TechNori Live from WGN Radio, where Chicago's top tech founders and entrepreneurs come to share their story. Sitting next to me, Sean Frelick from The Feed.
What up, Scott?
How are you doing?
Doing well. You like my shirt?
I love your shirt. Go Cats!
Northwestern Gator Bowl.
So the schedule just came out.
Oh,
home
yeah.
games. Notre Dame is here for the first time since like 1976.
I hate the
Irish as well.
Uh-huh.
We beat them when we were at Notre Dame. I was at the game. I was a little inebriated, so it didn't impact me as much as you would think. I was walking around in cowboy boots in like December or whatever it was.
You
it was
own
November.
Cowboy boots?
I own multiple pairs of cowboy boots. Lucchese's is the brand. That's my thing. At any rate, yeah, that's probably. I wear pants with them though. I don't wear them with shorts, just so we're clear, or a skirt or anything.
True. You're not going to the Country Thunder. This is football.
I've been to Country Thunder. I've been to them. I stopped going when I got like.
There's a curve. Right?
There's a curve where you go from like this is cool and hip to like dude. Back off. Anyway, I got to that curve and I left. So bottom line is I filled my boots up with water, not on purpose. I was like walking through kind of slushy rain tailgating.
Yeah.
And then it got into a deep freeze. It was like negative 20 degrees. And literally there was blocks of ice that like I had to go into the bathroom and actually like melt ice off my toes during the game.
Dude.
But then they won on a field goal 43-40. And I kept yelling, play like a champion. And a lot of Notre Dame guys were getting pretty pissed. So
you were getting under their skin?
Very much so, yeah.
That's good.
Screw Notre Dame. I ain't got time for that. But anyway, so cool for wearing the Go Cats.
I love the Cats.
Very cool. So anyway, I want to catch up with you and talk a little bit here before we jump into our show with our guest, Justin Howard, who's the founder of Sprout Social, who has so kindly joined us. We just got done with TechNori Showcase. We did the Future of Media.
I think it was our best show yet. Easily.
I hands down it was the best show that I've been a part of yet.
And your 1 year anniversary of being the host, correct?
Correct. That was my. Nice. And it's funny thing, I never mentioned that.
Uh-huh.
I didn't mention it at the showcase because, I did it real low key because we want to throw this Legends event and that's the one that'll be the big celebration. But I just haven't been able to. We're getting closer to getting this thing off the ground.
This is the unofficial anniversary.
This was the unofficial anniversary. We mixed it up a little. We had a little bit of a different sort of layout for how the show went. And Emerson Spartz, was. Made in a factory or some sort of jar or tube or something. I'm not sure. He was
he's
coated.
A bit of a savant. I think he can get that label.
I think he was
so much success.
Oh, he's a prodigy. I mean, I think that they made him. Like, I think he's actually a product of coding. I don't think that he's actually born to. I know he had parents that were there, but I don't think that. I don't know how
there's
he
something
was
something going on behind the scenes.
Dude, he was. I mean, I talk fast. That is on another level.
Yeah, he was provocative and. He was all over the place, but he strung it together in the end. It all kind of made sense.
Yeah, no, it was perfect.
It's easy to follow.
I just thought it was funny. The joke that I made is he gave a 2 hour keynote in 46 minutes, he did his 20 minute keynote. He did a 2 hour dissertation in 46 minutes.
Yeah,
that's a
right.
confusing way because that's how he talks. So I had to do it. It's like he has his own language. I don't know. Justin, I don't know if you know Emerson Spartz at all.
I do.
So you know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
It's like he's got Emerson speak. So we're trying to figure it out. But it was awesome. And I just kind of wanted to get your take before we head into the feed and then go to our guest here. I wanted to get your take on his take and all the company's takes on the future of media.
Well, I was pleased that he pointed out a lot of issues that I see with video in that one, you need to do subtitles on Facebook.
Yep.
And two, live is, I think, one of the big conundrums right now. And I think we're on the cutting edge of like trying to find a way for it to be relevant and to work because he was very blunt in that a lot of live video sucks.
Yeah.
And we work with it. And Emerson would probably say our live video sucks. But like even New York Times, Washington Post, I think their live video sucks as well.
Yeah.
It's a industry-wide issue that people are trying to solve. And I think he shed some light on what needs to be done, especially when he's talking about like comparing making videos to being a comedian. Like you have to test your jokes. You got to first do it with the friends. You got to do it with a small audience before you bring it to the big stage.
Yep.
Whereas video.
And look at what we do that though, like quite literally. I mean, we had this show started off as a different show, Two years later, we're now at TechNori Live and Startup Showcase. We're on live radio. We're also going live with video. But for the last year and a half, we've videotaped every one of these shows and prepared to go live.
Yeah.
I think the big differentiator for us is two pieces. And I think if anyone's listening, I recommend either you check out Emerson's tape on technori.com where it's getting posted. But the two pieces that are a big takeaway, and this is me great to talk to you, Justin, about social media in general, like how this all works, is ultimately, I think that as technology gets better to where our live videos can have video drops in it and we can put in graphics and things like that to really sort of create that produced final product in a live format,
yeah,
that's where we're going to start to get to those who execute well and that are going to have great shows. Which is funny that we act like we're worried about it when really you're just going from broadcast to internet stream. Nothing,
right.
Nothing's changing. Like, it's all the same. It's just a different mixer. It's just funny how people work with it. And then the other part is, you know, how this works on social media versus websites. We are going to apps and social media more than websites. We're not going to be going to a website in the future to find stuff. So I think it's important that we have pieces of the highlights, the best, you know, we joke about it already, the lack of self-esteem that people have because they see the best version of everyone on social media.
Yeah.
We have to create that. We have to give the best version of our shows posted on social media and then say, if you want to hear the live interview with Emerson Spartz, you got to go over to technori.com and we'll have it and we'll go live from there. You can't host it on Facebook every day because some people, all they know is what came up. They're not going to know what to click and what's good and worth their time. And
right.
It just all becomes kind of mashed together. So I think the big lesson takeaway for me there was that it's not random. Like, you really need to know what you're doing before you
do,
what's the intention behind why you went live? Did you go live just to go live or, you know, what's that? And so, you know, I'm thinking now just to change gears a little bit, I want to pivot over to him. Then we'll come back for the feed after our first guest. Justin, just because we were in this kind of conversation, which I think is right in your alley, just to recap here, Justin Howard, the founder of Sprout Social. I'm going to have you talk a little bit about what Sprout Social is.
Sure.
But I figured since we were just talking about this, what is your take on, or are you guys putting much thought into having brands and companies and people go live on social media versus having a more, I don't want to call it safe because that's the wrong word, but a more predicted, preset, structured posting schedule?
Yeah. I think to a point you made, there's a lot of value in the idea that we're with, whether it's social media, whether it's how we consume television today through Netflix and things like that, it's very asynchronous. And I think if you're going to be building for an audience that is consuming asynchronously, there is a lot of value in production that is, if you might as well put it there. In other words, people aren't going to stumble across your feed exactly when you're live.
Yep.
And if that's the case, then it's what's your objective, right? There's the raw attraction, especially around celebrities and folks like that, some of the YouTube stars, where that live feed makes total sense. If I'm a brand, even if I'm just an individual and people are going to be stumbling across what I hope to be the best versions of me, I think there's still a really big place for the production value that comes with,
sure,
with non-live. And I think that'll continue to be important. I think there's a difference between media and the consumers, right?
Sure.
When we think about consumers, there's this big, as you mentioned, there's this, not just incentive, but pressure to make sure you're putting your best foot forward. And rarely is that come across on the first take in live video.
Yeah.
Right. But as far as the brand side of the equation and who our customers are at Sprout, they're going to be working and continuing to work on more production value in places that can be pointed to and found. There's always going to be a place where live makes sense. But I expect there to still be a continued focus on the produced and more, I'll call it, long tail content that can be found over and over again. And
I was going to say, to me, it's like a yin and a yang a little bit. Like, I feel like there's certain, to me at least, on the live side, there's a call to action that doesn't exist as well in the produced part. It's, everything's going to live on the internet forever, so whatever, it is what it is. Yep. Once it's out, and you could say, relatively speaking, that one day later it doesn't matter.
Yep.
But in that day, the idea that we have Technori Live or Technori Showcase Tuesday night. On Tuesday night, if I said, hey, I'm sitting here with you, we're at Technori, are you going to come to the event tonight? And you're like, you know what? Yeah, I'm going to come. That would be such a difference maker, I think, than if I was like, if I had Justin come in and say, hey, will you tell people I'm going to come on, I'm going to see you at Technori Live? And it's like, produce. Yep. There's a certain element of surprise. There's that face. There's what you do, how you respond in the moment. And there's like a certain call to action that I can say, buy tickets right now.
Yeah.
And they'll do it, versus if it's a produced video that's just sitting there, it's like, and I'm done with the content now because I know what's coming next.
Yep.
And they cut out. And that's the part that, you know, where I think we're going to battle on between I mean, I think the answer ends up being that it's a marriage.
Yeah.
You end up taking, which I guess is a battle, but you're taking this combination of pieces of content within this live broadcast or not live at all, totally pre-produced, that is very specific and they're short bites. I know what you want. We know what you're looking for. Yep. Here it is. And that's mixed in and dropped in to our live pieces. And it all works, you know, synchronously together, ideally.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there are scenarios where live is going to make a lot of sense, and certainly the social networks that are hosting this content are putting a lot of effort into live video. Instagram is probably the latest.
Yeah,
and I think it's a big part of how we interact. I think that it's a matter of, is there a benefit to that? To yeah. that live and raw factor or not? Am I trying to elicit emotion or am I trying to share knowledge?
Yep.
And in the case where I'm trying to share knowledge, where the produced value might be stronger, and I can have my overlays and things like that that are helping get the point across, yep. then that's going to be the way to go. And if it's more of an emotional response that I'm looking for,
interesting, is you can do overlay now on live, and it's just a matter of doing it well.
Sure.
The thing that is kind of a challenge for me, at least, is I look at this and think, you know, it's almost kind of funny. Like, Twitter came out and they had Periscope and everything is 9-second video, right? Or whatever it was, 7 seconds, whatever Periscope originally was. And they extended it to like 11 seconds. And now we've extended it to infinity.
Yeah.
And it's like, did we screw up? Like, was the right number actually just like to get someone on for like 10, 12 seconds to watch and be like, how other than a child and a puppy or a kitty, dancing cat, how long could a normal human being, keep someone's entertainment and attention for more than like 12 seconds?
Yeah, I entirely agree. So I think that some of the best content that has been produced, at least in the last couple of years, has some kind of time constraint to it. Yeah. And there's some value in that.
It's interesting. So I guess, you know, we're sitting here with Justin Howard, the founder of Sprout Social. Why don't you kind of jump here and talk more about Sprout Social?
Sure.
What is Sprout Social as a whole? And then let's kind of get into some of the news making you guys have been into.
Yeah, sure. So we're a software company. We build social media tools for business. And to boil that down a little further, we build social media management and engagement products that are used by about 19,000 brands around the world. We help our customers who are trying to navigate the same kind of conversations that you and I just had, right? Yeah. Like, what is the future of social and how it relates to our business? So we build the tools that layer on top of social and help them make sense of it all, help them become better marketers, build stronger relationships with their customers, make better decisions. We've been at it for, we just had our 7th anniversary recently. So
very cool.
Been
congrats.
At it for a while and having an awesome time.
Which is cool because you think about it, I mean, 7 years, that's sort of like really when all of the social media started to filter into the businesses. Forever, it yeah. was like people on social media, and they were trying not to be because they want their business partners to find them on social media. And yeah. now the business is like, no, we're on it, and you better like us because we need the likes.
Yeah, yeah. There is very little distinction between personal and professional when it comes to social at this
That's
point.
The crazy part. I've got my personal page. It's followed by the same amount of people who follow my professional page, which yep. is all the same people. It's yeah, like, yeah. what was the point? I still don't know what the point is other than I wanted that little blue check mark.
Sure, sure.
Which is, you know, it's good for the
combine
those
audiences, right?
Well, they're the same people. That's
yeah.
the problem.
Well,
that's
okay,
the problem.
There you go. Yeah.
That's the problems of like, I go like, I literally, like, if I'm going to write something, which is also kind of funny, if I'm going to write something like personal, I write it on my personal page. Like, oh, I mean, I still share all my business stuff, but like, I'll write like, hey, you know, good time at the Blackhawks game or something. And I don't write any vulgarity and stuff on my personal one,
yeah.
but on my professional one, because that's part of the character. It's F-bomb yeah, yeah, this, yeah. F-bomb that, because I'm thinking, hey, it might get some clicks.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, now that we have you in here, we've got a lot of social media companies and their founders who listen, not social media, sorry, startup companies and their founders who are in Chicago who listen to this, as well as large organizations. What are you seeing as sort of the difference, if any at all, in how you would suggest a startup company approach their social media strategy for growth versus, say, I don't mean like Nike, but like
sure.
someone who's not like a quote unquote SMB, but you know,
yeah,
next level.
Yeah, I actually think one of the most interesting things about social is that there's a bit of an even playing field when it comes to it. Doesn't kind of matter how big you are,
yep.
right? It's certainly you can have a head start or be a laggard, but in terms of the ability
almost
to
argue
reach,
it's an advantage to be the startup because you don't have so many rules and so many people to go yeah. through to post.
There's also an opportunity to, exactly like you said, to instill personality, to create a strong connection with your customers yeah. and things like that when you don't have to jump through as many hoops. So I don't think the strategies are particularly different. I think certainly the resources that you can that you could point toward social and some of those marketing efforts are interesting. But, you know, for us, we've grown, you know, at what we think is a pretty nice clip and almost entirely off the back of social media, right? Yeah. Like when we were getting started, the way that people found out about our products was either through our social media efforts or people talking about them. And still today, you know, 80% of our customers come from word of mouth, and that's largely social. So we started with zero followers, just like everyone else. And
practice
and,
what you preach is what you guys
well,
did.
Well, totally. Literally. I mean, definitely something that we've dog-fooded, and that's been a really healthy way for us to make sure that we're building good products and the kind of things that our customers need. But it's also kind of a proof point, right, that started from scratch and have built this pretty large customer base largely through a social channel. We don't need million-dollar ad buys. We don't need a lot of these things that have been historically moats for people to get into a market. You just don't need that anymore. You get a great content team, you get a great social media team, and you have a good product and message to put out in the world, and you can get it out there.
Well, you know, you might be like the king of modesty, because I'm sitting here looking at this, talking about your, you know, we've grown a little bit. We've been a couple of years. You're the CEO of the year, according to Glassdoor, for companies with 1,000 employees. You just won a Moxie Award, correct?
Yes.
And Glassdoor also chose Sprout Social as one of the top places to work in 2017. Was it number one? Something like that. It's close. I have numbers somewhere here.
Yeah.
Best place, one of them, named being one of the best places to work in 2017.
Yeah, yeah. We've had a great run. A lot of really good recognition for the work that the team's been doing. It's a long time in the making, of course. But we're
I had to mention it because you're sitting here saying like as if it's like, well, you know, we do okay. I mean, among many,
yeah,
we do
okay.
Look,
it's funny, right?
We're just award winning like on a trio of awards. No worries.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I appreciate that, and it's those are things that we're certainly super proud of. But it's interesting in the tech world. You're always being compared to you know, companies that are much, much larger. And
you know what I love about it, though? The thing about the tech world that I absolutely love, having jumped into this and with Technori, and now we're launching, we've got an incubator called Mockery Media, and we've got a bunch of different verticals of in the media space. What I love about it is I feel like it's that LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, Michael Jordan thing. Tech companies that are startups are like that new like, oh, here's this new person with tons of upside that's coming into the game. And everyone's like, oh, is that the next Sprout Social? Is that the next sports Mockery or whatever? Is this the next thing? Is this the next Tribune? And you get to live it up and like actually try to prove it every day. If you're not fighting, you're getting crushed by your competitor, which makes this so much more exciting than I think the regular day job that we all probably used
to
have.
And the next hurdle is right around the corner, right? There's always that next stage that you want to get to. And if you know, we're pretty internally motivated, and we've always got bigger stuff we want to accomplish, which you know, I think is a healthy bar to have. But
so, in the would you say you're currently, how many people are working with Sprout or working for Sprout? Sorry,
I think it's close to 400 at this
400
point.
Now,
maybe just shy of 400.
So in the last, how would you say the majority of the growth has been the last couple of years, or was it sort of like, how long did it take you guys to get really rolling?
Yeah. So the growth in terms of the size of the company has been fairly steady, like a lot of doubling, just now the numbers are a little bit bigger. It took us probably about a year and a half until we really found our footing as a company. And that had largely to do with the product. So when we first came to market, when we first raised venture capital and things like that, the product that we had at that point, it was good, but it was not what we felt like was going to scale and was going to do the things that we needed it to do. So we decided to rebuild that thing from scratch. Kind of while in motion, right? We had taken venture capital, we had customers on the platform and things like that.
Sure, they loved that idea.
Yeah, fairly risky, right? Those board conversations were
quiet, chirping.
We took the time, we built it right, we launched that new version of the product. There were some hiccups, you know, coming out of the gate, but within a couple of weeks, kind of the business had transformed, and that was about a year and a half in. But that was the point where we really started to take off, and I'd say most companies are going to go through a number of inflection points. I think one of our most recent ones is probably in the last 6 months or so, kind of shifting into a new gear.
So can you kind of walk, I mean, we're totally going to kind of take a balance beam approach here. I'm going to walk a little bit on the side of like your own business operation, like how you do this.
Yep.
Think about it from if you're helping, I guess I would say you're trying to get your client to be able to operate in the same sort of way that you operate.
Sure.
On one side of this, how would you recommend building a company and also marketing your company and growing at the same time? Because you guys literally do that, like that's what you do for a living, is grow these companies. You use grassroots to get your own brand going.
Yep.
And you're recommending to other people that they do the same thing. How do you, what would be some of your recommendations for someone just starting up now who wants to do a good job of scaling a company quickly.
Yeah.
But also is like trying to figure out like, well, how do I do that?
Yeah. The first thing I'll say in this, may be counterproductive to your question, but,
most things are
every journey is entirely different. Yeah. And I think the quicker you recognize that and that, you know, myself or people like me may have been at it for a while, but we don't know your situation the way you do, et cetera, et cetera. So one of the, I think skills to master early on is just being able to filter that out and figure out what, you know, what applies to you and what doesn't. Yep. There was, you know, there's been countless advice along the way that had we took it would have been, could have derailed us in a lot of different ways. But in terms of getting the company going, I mean, for us as a software company, it was all about product, right? We wanted to make sure that we got the product absolutely right. And there wasn't a lot else to talk about until that happened. And it's, I guess you could say, a bit of an advantage to have that kind of focus, right?
Sure.
But so for us, it was get the product right. Once we feel like that's right, get some people to test it out and prove our hypothesis and talk to us about the things that might still not be quite right with it and continue to improve. And because we had that kind of organic customer engine that was happening through word of mouth and things like that, we never really had to shift gears from that. So we never had to stop and say, okay, the product's done. Now let's go figure out how to take it to market. Let's figure out how to sell it and price it and all this kind of stuff. It was all this kind of fluid process. But I think, you know, if I'm putting my, if I were to quit tomorrow and start something new, I think that the understanding if you've got a product that the world needs, I think is important. The Juicero thing recently was a pretty comical example of how that can go wrong. Understanding if you've got a product that the world needs, and then figuring out do you have a unique way of solving that problem or some way of solving it that's going to be materially better than what else is out there. And then making sure shortly after, and I'm talking all of this in the very early days, probably even before you raise money, is figuring out what people are willing to pay for it and confirming that people are willing to pay for it, right?
How do you then take that? So now as an advertiser or a marketer, how do you take that? It's like now I've proven that I've got value, or at least my case study suggests that I've got some value. I think I know what they're going to pay. Obviously, that and what you're producing usually is going to take a couple of pivots. One way or another, prices change, competitors come in, whatever.
Yep.
But how do you then get that out in public and get people to want to buy into you? How do you really get people to be like, wow, you know, there's a million social media companies.
Yeah.
Why would I go with Sprout Social versus somebody else? And you guys did an amazing job at getting people like, you know what, I buy in. They buy into you when they work for you, and the people who use you as your clients buy into you equally as strong, it seems.
Yeah. I think that's right. I think some of it has to do with the medium that we play in, right? Being a business that's in the orbit of social and kind of lives on social, that human quality of building something that people respond to and building strong relationships with them is just kind of inherent, right? If you're social first, that's an important piece. If you're not, building those relationships, nobody's going to pay attention. So I think we had that going for us. But, you know, generally speaking, I think that the most scalable way to get the word out is always going to be just like a pay-per-click campaign.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and Emerson probably talked about this a bit, but like the quickest way to test anything is to buy those, figure out what a paid customer cost.
Yep.
And can you convert them and figure out if your conversion funnel works and the unit economics and all that kind of stuff? Because those word of mouth customers are awesome, but they're not going to give you a true sense of your business. At
Correct.
Least not what it's going to take to
scale. Well,
it's
like the loyalists. You can't predict that. That's not something I can scale.
Yep. So you'll walk in and you'll talk about how you have this $0 customer acquisition cost and this tremendous lifetime value, but that's not real yet, right?
Yeah.
What is it going to take to actually scale that? And so why not solve that problem up front and start
I love
with
the,
some paid customers?
We have like 100,000 followers already.
Yeah.
I'm like, all right, great. How'd you get them? Oh, well, you know, it's like mostly just like word of mouth. Like, all right, cool. Do you know another 100,000 people?
Yeah, exactly.
Because like, where is this next? Like, where is the growth going to come from?
Yep.
And how are you gonna? You've learned. You can learn almost nothing from that.
Yeah.
Which
it's,
is scary.
Something that might be relevant. So early on, I think our mix was our first users, probably our first couple hundred, were certainly all through social, and that engine kind of perpetuated. But I'd say the mix for us early on was maybe 80% was paid, the rest was organic, word of mouth, whatever. Now you know, some years later, that's flipped where it's more like 80% is organic word of mouth and the rest is paid. Progression from the word of mouth and paid give us a great understanding of our business and understanding unit economics early on.
What do you think of, like, for, I guess, like just for us, even we think about this with technologies, we try to continue to grow our audience. We've got what I would call that word of mouth audience we started with that Seth built over time here of just like, literally, I can look through our likes and I can, I mean, I can tell you like a story about almost every person who likes the page. Yeah, yeah. I know them that well. As we start to grow, we're looking at doing paid ads and paid Facebook advertising to try to get like with our best content forward and put it out there and give people a chance to find us for the first time in the hope that we'll do what you did, which is to flip it to 80%, be like, wow, I'm going there because that's hilarious. It's totally a great way of doing news. What are some tips you would have for me and any other company like me as it comes to being careful with the paid Facebook ad? Because there's two sides of that paid form where some go to who the hell knows who that dude is and why his name has 42 letters and me.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the first thing is you never want to pay for unqualified traffic, right? Which is not putting it out to people who are not likely to be interested in what you have to offer.
Which is what you do if you just hit boost.
Yeah.
When it just says hit boost.
Yep.
You just sent that to like a Nigerian something like ClickBank.
Yep. A bunch of people who your message is not going to resonate with. That doesn't make any sense. So.
Yet they still click like.
Yeah. Or... Yeah. And you're going to pay for that advertising and it's going to yield nothing, right?
Yeah.
So targeting is obviously huge. And that's one of the coolest things about advertising on social is the number of signals that we have for targeting like that is the ability to reach your kind of audience, right? And to hang out in Facebook groups that are related to the industry and stuff like that.
Yep.
It's, I think, fish where the fish who are interested in whatever it is that you do are.
Yeah.
Because you can get a ton of traffic and a ton of other things that are meaningless to your business.
Yeah. I think is where we're learning. I mean, I feel like we obviously start off like my recommendation, if maybe I'm wrong, my recommendation is always start with those who like your page and their people. Start with that. And then try to work your way across and see if you can branch out and find different areas in new groups that it might attract attention.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you know, if we're thinking regionally, there's a lot of ways to target this type of person, right?
Yep.
In, or the person who would be interested in this content within a region. There's lookalike audiences on some of the social networks where you can say, okay, show me people who like whatever, another,
anyone who likes TechCrunch would like Technori is our hope. Yeah.
Yep.
Very cool. This has been awesome. Where do people learn more about Sprout Social and you and just in general?
Yeah. So sproutsocial.com is the best place to learn about us. Glassdoor/Sprout Social is a great place to learn about working for us. We have great content, both what we're doing, what we're up to as a company, as well as kind of the industry and social and trends in social. So, which you can find it at sproutsocial.com.
Awesome. Justin, thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, of course.
This is great. Sean?
Yeah, so I got my mind rolling about Facebook Live.
I heard the keys are typing, so I was waiting to turn around to you.
Yeah, so I think one of the advantages Facebook Live gives its audience is a sense of authenticity. I think because I'm thinking about things on the journalistic side of things a lot, and obviously fake news is one of the biggest debates. And, of course, CNN just fired. Three people resigned from CNN for retracting a Russia story.
Yep.
And I think Live kind of deletes the room for faking it or doctoring or
it at least puts like a certain amount of truth behind it, you feel like,
mm-hmm.
a little bit.
So I think that's one thing that is attractive through Facebook Live. It's like, well, you can't fake it when you're doing it live.
Yeah, I mean, you would think. I mean, I guess you could come on and just bullshit your way through the whole thing, which it does happen. But, I think ultimately there's something to me about what happens live that you just can't replace it. You know what I mean? Like, and this is I don't even want to go in this direction, so I don't know why I'm saying this. This is a huge mistake, and I'm saying it ahead of time.
Here we go.
I'm already saying it. But this is a live moment type of thing. The Bill Maher example, when he dropped the N-word.
Yeah, yeah.
Probably a fireable offense. But it struck a major conversation about what is appropriate and what is okay because of who you are and all these different things. And that's a moment that if there wasn't live, wouldn't happen. And I know that that's a bad example and a bad thing that happened, but it started a conversation that brought out, in the end, two sides, people who are vehemently calling for his firing, to come back after he talked to Ice Cube and a few other people who were like, listen, totally inappropriate, man. But it just shows how in a bubble people live.
Right, yeah.
And I think that live brings that out of people. I think produced people's nerves step in and they don't let that stuff happen. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's something about that. And then the other part that came in with Justin that was really interesting was when he talked about, you know, obviously he's won CEO of the Year with Moxie Awards and is one of those people who is growing an incredible, not growing, he's grown an incredible company. He's continued to grow.
No kidding.
One of the things that stood out to me is another example that I've heard from numerous CEOs, and I'm a huge fan of it myself, and I have a rule. I don't know if they call it this, but in my head, my rule is I have a no U-turn rule. I even follow when I'm driving, literally. That's where it came from, a no U-turn rule. Things happen, make a mistake, you just got to keep driving through and find another direction.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't ever stop when I blow past a turn or something. I never stop and go spin around and drive around and try to retrack. I just find the route. I just find another route.
Like Bill can take his joke back. So
yeah, he couldn't find another
live route. Opportunity to have Ice Cube on to discuss it.
And well, he also had a couple of guys from professors and other guys that have been on Cornell West and some other guys have been on the show to be like, listen, like I screwed up. Let's what can we do? Like how can we make this not terrible and not just be a garbage apology?
Uh-huh.
But the point is, I think that the great CEOs, the great leaders, not just CEOs, the great leaders are folks that come around and recognize that when something goes they're not their way. That's just a bump in the road, and they just keep on flying through it, and they just find another way.
Yeah, right.
Which ultimately leads to our next guest, because he keeps finding another way, we've got James Belfi, who is the co-founder of, I hope I pronounce this right, Vugo?
That's correct. Just yes. Like Hugo Boss.
Hugo Boss, Vugo Boss. We got Vugo's Boss. So welcome to the show. We're kind of having a conversation here about leadership and about being able to make things happen even though people don't want you to make it happen or they don't like it or they don't think that you're, you know, can do it or whatever. And you're in one of those businesses that it seems like there's been some struggles and you could have very easily folded the tent and been like, well, I guess I'm not wanted here. But instead, you just kept on flying through it.
Yeah, we've come to consider that kind of a badge of honor. We feel that it's kind of somebody feels so strongly about this one way or the other. There may be a market there.
There has to be.
And that means there's immense amounts of value because you have to ask what are their motivations, what are their incentives. And, you know, just to be perfectly clear about what I think you're talking about, the most obvious examples of this are both the city of New York and the city of Chicago. I was living in Chicago when we started Vugo. But we incorporated in Minneapolis because the city of Chicago had made our business illegal before we even got started.
Yep.
And so I still come here often. I've got a network here. I've got friends, family. But I had to relocate to Los Angeles to be able to operate in a large major American market.
And what you do, just so everyone's clear, what Vugo does.
So we do, surprisingly, this happens in Chicago, but the way we do it, it's particularly illegal. We do in-car entertainment and media, specifically in rideshare services. So we put ads and entertainment inside Uber and Lyft vehicles and other. There's like 42 different companies across the United States that do ride sharing. Uber and Lyft just being the two largest ones. That's what we do in a nutshell.
Why is that something that is illegal in? Let's just stick with Chicago for the sake of
argument. And also, did Chicago make that ruling when they caught wind of you, or is it just a coincidence?
It's definitely not a coincidence. You don't typically make a municipal ordinance because of a coincidence.
Yeah.
they didn't do it because of us. We formed our company after the ruling had – the municipal ordinance had occurred. I can't name any names here, but I'll tell you that I tried to work my network as much as possible, got some informal information from the city of Chicago about the reasoning behind it. And really what you had was two big piles of money sitting at the table, neither of which had recently read the Constitution.
Yeah.
so no names.
Isn't it funny how that works? The bigger the bag of money, the less likely it is that they read nor give a shit about the Constitution.
That's correct.
It's a very funny circumstance we have.
But the good news is that the Supreme Court recently had a ruling on commercial speech that actually supports our arguments and the fact that, you know, it's a really slippery slope when you start in an organization's ability to advertise.
Sure.
And more importantly, the public's ability to access information.
Well, yeah, that's kind of a no-no. That this, if there was one thing, listen, this country might have been built on a whole bunch of shit. I don't know. You know, it seems like every day it's like seems like a little more stuff gets taken away or whatever. But the one thing that we have always kind of stood on is the fact that you have freedom of information. You live here with the ability to find out. Now, whether you choose to learn it and find it out is your own problem. But we live in a place where you can find it out. Yep. And it's no doubt to me that like at some point that's got to be flipped if it hasn't already, because you can't. I honestly, it surprises me that the big bag of money that is the corporations who want to advertise, that they would allow that to happen. Because like I would think that for any major company, they would want the ability to get inside of that car.
Yeah, I'll tell you, there's a lot of advertisers that are very interested
in
accessing that car and accessing the data and getting in front of passengers at the right time, at the right place, right before they make purchasing decisions.
And that's a good thing for you.
Which is great for me. The only problem is that there seems to be a monopoly on in-car advertising in the city of Chicago with taxis.
Yeah. And they play the same loop constantly. And, you know, a little secret for them, in case they're wondering. I don't know if this might not help. I hope this helps your case, but... You know that the taxi drivers, almost everyone I've ever been in the city of Chicago, the very second that you get in the car when it starts rolling, if you don't say or do anything, they reach their hand around and they hit the off button. And most of them do it on the first touch. They don't even have to shake their hand because they do it so often.
There's a couple reasons for that. The first being that they don't really see much incentive from that.
Sure.
The second one being is that the passenger entertainment experience is not the focus of taxi entertainment. It's actually credit card processing.
Yeah,
that's the reason why there's taxi TV. It has nothing to do with entertainment. It has very little to do with advertising. It has almost everything to do with subsidizing the cost of credit card processing machines. And so what Viugo's done is we've said, hey, yes, there's a model that does in-car advertising inside, you know, taxis, but it's fundamentally broken, just like the taxi industry was fundamentally broken. Yep. So why don't we change something? Say our first priority is improving the passenger entertainment experience, because here's a big news flash for everyone listening. You're going to be still, average American spends 1 hour in the car daily.
Yep.
Okay. I was talking to your account executive in there. He spends almost 3 hours in the car daily.
Oh, Bob.
Okay.
Oh, Bob. He's always driving around.
So
3 hours a day.
I want to ask you, what would you do with 60 hours a week that you're stuck in a car? What would you do if you're sitting at a room in your house?
I'd listen to the Technori podcast. That's what I'd do.
Yet, you'd watch Technori
podcast.
Well,
yeah, I would. But if I wasn't driving, yeah, I'd watch it even better.
Well, autonomous vehicles are right around the corner.
They are true.
And you're not going to be driving in radio. I'm glad you guys are doing video now.
Yeah. We've been doing video since the get-go. I did video as I was doing the first podcast.
Fantastic. Car radio without video is probably going to go away.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, already electric cars don't even have AM, so already, like, and there has been no pushback on that. Like, yep. I said that numerous people, like, if you get a Tesla, you don't have AM radio, and they're like, not one person's like, son of a. They're just like, oh, that's weird. And then they just keep walking right on by.
There are actually some large investors who own both car dealerships and radio stations, and I'm really trying to get in front of them because both those industries are going to
be. You're the person who's going to be able to help them out.
Yeah, because in-car entertainment's going to be visual. It's going to
it has to be.
I'm no longer driving my car. I want to watch a movie. Even in Teslas today, you can actually watch Monty Python clips.
Yes, which is awesome. And that gigantic screen.
Yep.
So I'm going to pitch you on an idea. You probably already have it, so it won't matter. And then we're going to talk a little bit about building a company that was put out, you know, that was ruled to put out of business before you actually filed the paperwork. Because it's very rare that we get to sit down with someone who has not voluntarily, you have taken on a mission to build a company where there is preset barriers. And it was just sort of like, beep, don't care, keep going. So first, here's my pitch. I had this idea, and it was basically because of you, as we had a couple of messages back and forth, and you're talking about your business. And I thought, if I could, I was thinking like an airplanes. Choice to watch a movie? No. I'm not going to spend whatever it is for their movie. Even if it's like, maybe if it's a long flight and I don't have my computer or whatever, I might like buy it. But for the most part, I'm not going to. I'll just like tell myself in my head that I can read or do something else. But if you start playing a movie or you start playing Seinfeld or something, and even in a cab, I'm not going to pay for a 5-minute ride to start something. But what if you started playing an episode of a show I liked and it was like 99 cents more, I can keep watching it as I keep the ride. I would absolutely click on that that gets added on to my credit card bill at the end of it. If you put content that was quality enough in there to keep me from listening to that dude talking to his friend in whatever country they're in, which every single driver's on the phone the entire time talking to somebody else, and it drives me insane, and I could actually watch a game or watch the news or watch something, I would absolutely hit the keep going and add a dollar to my ride fare almost every time. Would that work? And can I get a piece of it?
So I got a little bit of goosebumps here because we have not actually thought of that before.
I knew I had this job for a reason.
However, I will
however, it
you,
won't work.
No. It absolutely,
I mean, there is some rights issues, but
it'll absolutely work. In fact, it actually might have solved some fundamental problems that we've had. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, keep me posted on how that works. Keep me posted on how that works.
What I heard from an investor in Los Angeles, word for word, he said, "Why don't we just charge $1 per trip for premium content?"
Yep.
And that mechanism that you just described is probably one of the best ways to do so.
Well, hey, you know what? If there's ever room for me on your board, you just let me know. I got more of these ideas. So thank you. That was the first thing I thought of when you first started talking to me just about your business, and I looked it up. I was like, man, the first thing that came to my mind is all the times that I would love to, I would listen to stuff, but I would never select it.
Yep.
It would only be something where it's like an opt to stay. Yep. Which is sort of our, we do that with our advertising. That's actually, I probably shouldn't say this on the show, but the original show before Technori that I started, the first sponsorships I got were, I just bullshitted my way through. I started a show and I said, this segment's sponsored by Insperity. And then I called up Insperity and was like, hey, this show got shared, 600 times. You want a different sponsor? And they were like, yeah. And I was like, boom, pay to stay. And that was my model. So I just literally just started calling out sponsors that I thought would appreciate the content, call them up and say, I sponsored you and this thing got shared a whole bunch of times. I'm sorry, we should have called you first, but I'll pull it down unless you want to pay whatever, and then I'll do it again.
So,
and they would all pay to do it again. They
in
all
the content rights world, I don't feel like taking that kind of risk.
No, probably not.
Agents are actually in
Chicago.
Well,
no, I wouldn't do that with the actual content. I wouldn't do that with the content. What I was referring to is the mechanism in people's brains.
It's genius.
Where if you put it in front of them, they'd rather do it.
And we will probably implement that.
So speaking of the business and being ridiculously smart, you are one of the few people, a lot of people, not that you're not the only one who's done this, but a lot of people in tech and in startups in general, doesn't have to just be tech, tend to solve problems that in my personal opinion are already solved or are being addressed. And it sort of like irks me. And Howard Tolman and Fred Hoke from TechNexus actually just had a story. I don't know if it was Forbes or Inc. or where it was that just came out. No, Chicago Inno. It was local. It was Chicago Inno. About the fact that Chicago's success the last 18 months has been a lot to do with the fact that we refound ourselves and stopped trying to emulate the coast and stopped doing the easy thing and started looking at what we do best and actually try to solve problems that are real problems rather than like, what's the next, pet my dog app? Like, what's the next, find a date with a bagel app? And you decided right off the bat, very talented, smart guy, can do just about anything you want to do, decided I'm going to launch a company around something that's literally being prohibited by law in two of the biggest markets that I plan on reaching. One, were you crazy? And two, like how did you formulate your business plan around knowing that the first or second, third thing you have to accomplish is breaking down barriers?
So I wish I could say it's because I'm brave. I would say it's probably because I'm stubborn. When we got started, we built, put up a landing page. We built a minimum viable product. We assembled a small team. Then we got lucky, and we got covered by Adweek. So this is
good start.
Yeah. In fact, the reporter actually told me she wasn't going to publish our article. And then 2 weeks later, my phone exploded. I didn't know why. I was like, why are people calling me? Why do I have 100 missed calls today? And the very first call I actually picked up was a very large publisher of Nationwide Magazine and said, hey, we really want to reach people in Beverly Hills. But Beverly Hills has a ban on billboards in L.A. And if you're in L.A., if you don't have billboards, you're not really able to reach that market. Yeah. They're like, hey, we want to put our advertisers in inside vehicles.
And they sit in traffic in L.A. for about 45 minutes to go a half a mile.
Yep. With that said, that was just one of the conversations that I had out of maybe 50, 60 conversations with entities of that size. So I realized, hey, we just released some pressure. It's like, you know, there's this massive amount of demand on the advertiser side, and we just pricked it with a needle. Like, yep. We just barely touched it. They read about us in one article, and boom, my phone melted. There's unmet demand in this space that people are spending their time in cars. It's not time that's being fully utilized. And I mean, advertising is just the easiest.
So you look at this as just like laying the tracks so that you're there for the future, ready to roll.
Actually, we are very much focused on the infotainment space and becoming the software supplier of autonomous automakers.
Knowing full well that that's where things are going.
Absolutely.
So it's like we have to lay the track. We've got to prove our model. We've got to prove the use case. We've got to raise some capital, get an infrastructure, a team in place, and actually work together mm-hmm. as a team so that when things start to pivot and the new Apple car comes out, you're rocking and rolling with Apple TV content rolling out of the car.
That is exactly correct. I'd say that there's a few steps in between there that you skipped.
Yeah, I would say a few, yeah.
But the biggest thing is data.
Yeah.
How do passengers who are no longer driving their cars interact with media and entertainment and advertising? And how can we monetize their attention? That is really like it's a blue ocean out there.
Yeah.
Outside of taxi TV, which we all hate, drivers hate, everybody wants to turn it off. But that doesn't mean that people don't want to be entertained inside cars. It means that the current...
Just do a better job.
Yeah, just do a better job. There's never been, like, those businesses literally thrive on monopolies. They get the city of Chicago to mandate credit card processing. The taxi companies don't want to pay for the equipment, so they subsidize the equipment by advertising, giving NBC and ABC a loss leader to promote their program.
Yep. This is to show you exactly how far into the weeds my brain goes. As I think about autonomous cars, the only thing I'm thinking about is that there's a brand new purpose for tinted windows.
Oh.
Not going to respond to that
You know where I'm going with this. Because, like, you can just see.
I think a lot of people are going to sleep in the car as well.
Yeah, that's part of it. Well, no, there will be lots of things going on in the car. I can't help myself because I think of it, I'm like, most people are creeps. Most people would be like driving around like, oh, that's a pretty big screen. My wife's at work. I'm alone. I don't know.
You know, one of my favorite, so in this space, I just want to say there's lots of room. It's literally one of the few $1 trillion marketplaces that is just sitting out there. Out there. Everyone can see it every day. They get in their car. They get into an Uber. They get into a taxi. They get into a bus, wherever. Guess what? Market is just sitting there. It's over Intel said the passenger economy is going to be $7 trillion. Bloomberg came out with an article saying $1.5 trillion for data-driven services that are going to help occupants utilize their time inside autonomous vehicles. So it's a $1 trillion market just sitting out there.
Well, yeah. I mean, think about how much time, like you said, with reference of Bob, 60 hours. Like, how much time? What could you do with that time? I mean, for me, I'm thinking the one thing that's a benefit of the train is that I get a lot of work done on the train. I'd get some work done in the car, but if I'm worked on the car, that's more subscriptions to shit that I can buy. Right, yeah. That's more stuff that I can use and buy and add to the economy. So, smart man, you got something going on here for sure. I know where this is going. I see it like you do, maybe not as fine tuned certainly as you see it because you do it every day. But I absolutely, as a person who's in the content generation world, see this as like a great window for us to place our content. And we definitely, like, we were just meeting with companies today about different types of apps that are convey content in a very different way that people are not used to yet. And if I sold it to someone now, they'd be like, what a waste. But in a year from now, they're going to be like, that's like the only way I consume.
That's the one thing with autonomous cars is the adoption is going to be
it's going to be insane. It's like, it's as if you went, this is what I related to. In the media world, this impact is going to be as if I just told you that there's now 27 hours in the day. If I told you 27 hours in the day, I just gave you 3 more hours of daytime to compact and sell shit to me. And that's what you did.
And or call your mom.
Whatever you want to do. But even that, that's another subscription. That's another minutes on your phone. That's another phone. That's now it's voice. You're going to FaceTime on your car.
Yep.
And which means while you're on the car FaceTiming, you're going to be on your phone texting and doing other stuff.
Yep.
So it's just like 3 hours just created.
A lot of people ask us, you know, what about the mobile device? I'm like, the phone is a secondary screen.
Yep.
It's not your primary. When you go home and you're watching TV, are you watching programming on your phone the entire time? No, you have a big screen in your house.
This is like my remote.
Because if you spend 60 hours a week like Bob inside your car, it's going to get really boring if you don't have something to do.
Yeah.
If you're no longer actively driving, what are you going to do? You're going to watch sports. You're going to listen to podcasts. You're going to watch music videos.
I will say it's crazy. To give you an example of this is real time. I spent this whole weekend painting with my girlfriend. We're painting up everything and paint the everything. It sucks. I'm never going to paint again. I'm retired. I break my paintbrush over my knee when I'm done. But we took the TVs and stuff down and took all kinds of couches and covered so we didn't paint it. And for the first time in forever, I literally listened to the radio for 4 days straight. It was awesome. I'll never do it again, but it was awesome. So it's just like kind of shows like, and then we turned it back on. We got the TVs back on and everything else. And now I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. Just imagine if I could bring you that feeling of amazement into your drive or whatever else.
It's just like in-flight entertainment.
Yeah.
It's a really easy comparison, a model that's very similar. Flights feel a lot shorter when you're watching a movie or watching TV inside the plane. We want to bring that.
Depends on who you're sitting next to, but yeah. For the most part.
We want to bring that same experience to the car. Now, I want to blow your mind one more step.
Yep.
Where I don't know if you've gone this far, if you read these articles yet, but mobility as a service or transportation as a service, Vugo's mission is threefold. Our overarching big hairy problem that we're trying to solve is we want to make most transportation free through an advertising
yep.
model, meaning that if you're a single mom trying to get to work back and forth, we want to make your trip free. We want to remove transportation insecurity from
yep.
the marketplace. And we do that literally by becoming a marketplace.
Yep.
So we're starting low-hanging fruit with media, video, ads, but we want to become the
essentially
Amazon
the engine.
Of the car,
yeah.
essentially.
Very cool. Well, the logo makes more sense even more now. Very cool. Where do people go? This is what I figured. I was like, now it makes a lot of sense. If you flip it upside down, it's like they look like eyeballs. It's different.
Yeah, yeah.
At any rate, where do people go to learn more about this and kind of keep up with what you guys are working on?
They can go to www.govugo.com.
Okay.
govugo.com.
Very cool. James, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
So you're on board to buy an autonomous car once it becomes
Oh, my God,
available.
Yes. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
Done. I affectionately call my i3 Howard. Howard is he's on, man. Like, Howard could remove his drivability. I want the ability to drive when I want to, like, run people over. But when I'm not running people over, I want an autonomous car.
Yeah, I just hope they still have, because like you just mentioned, I enjoy the feeling of driving a car.
Me too.
Especially stick shift. So
I was just going to tell you. So what, my dad has an 85 BMW 635. I still take that and drive it around just for fun because it's like that's that feeling of like driving a vehicle. So buy yourself an old.
It's very masculine.
It is very masculine. It's, I don't know how that just did for all of our female founders out there. They just got creeped out. But
they have masculinity in them, too. They can enjoy
Well,
it.
Yes, I suppose so. But it was I was more referring to your sound effects as you went, rrr. I don't know if that was a car or that was your engine, but either way. So before we head out of the show here, we have to catch up on the feed, of course. And I'm looking forward to not only get the feed, but then afterward, I want to get your quick thoughts wrap up on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm back in the kitchen, buckos. It's time to dish out top tech news of the bonus slice of weird. Did you hear about this one? Google was fined $2.7 billion by European antitrust officials for using its outsized weight to tip the market in their own favor. It's like trying to get a seat at the counter at the local malt shop, and you find the varsity football team is there for an after-practice milkshake. The only way you're going to get a seat at the table is if the chef makes room for you, and I don't want another black eye. This is one of the largest fines ever doled out by the European Union to a tech company. Europe is no fan of seeing their market and hundreds of millions of citizens being pushed and persuaded by some nerds across the ocean in Silicon Valley. Europe wants to call its own shots, and it is showing that they expect tech companies to respect their rules. Now, Google has an annual revenue of around $90 billion, so what does a $2.7 billion really mean to them? The biggest fine ever dropped by Europe on an American tech company was the $14 billion tax to Apple because they were in a, quote, sweetheart deal with Ireland to avoid some tax payments. Have you ever paid for a dating service? If it worked, more power to you. How many kids do you got now? But, I once tried the subscription service for OkCupid, and I spent a pretty $30, and I felt like it didn't change my experience whatsoever. Ladies still didn't appreciate my wit. You know what? I got my money back. Booyah, baby. But here comes Tinder, who is announcing a new way they think will get you to punch in your credit card information, and it will be known as Tinder Gold. What Tinder Gold offers is the ability for you to see every person that likes you without having to find them through the random swiping. But for me, I like to be left in the dark about who's into me. The possibilities then are endless. The service will be a $10 monthly fee for those under 30 and will be $20 for those over 30. Hey, isn't that ageist? People over 30 are deserving of love too. This week, I want to give the Technori shout out to Procured Health, who is working to cut down on healthcare costs. Obviously, this is the most consequential political fight happening right now in Capitol Hill. Procured Health noticed that hospitals were getting upcharged on equipment without their knowledge, which makes everything more expensive. Procured Health services help hospitals specialize their care to patients so unnecessary treatments or unnecessary products are not given to these patients who can hardly afford it anyways. So the mission here is putting more power in the hands of the hospitals. That's it for me. Please check out our full show on Technori.com every Monday night. Bless you.
God bless you, Sean.
Thank you.
Nice job. So overall, your thoughts, we did a first kind of full run here, co-host a little bit here, did a whole bunch of things. We're going to be doing a lot more of this in the future, some live stream. That's probably one of the reasons we talk so much about it. But what were your overall takeaways from this show as a person who is sort of not new to this, but getting more introduced?
We can't avoid the subject of video, it seems. That's
right?
What we keep talking about. There was a lot of looking to the future here. I mean, it really seems that the path that Vugo is on is inevitable. I think he seems like very stressed out about Chicago because, I mean, obviously it seems to me that Chicago is being unfair towards him and other innovators.
Well, I can
like
tell
him.
You, having had meetings with some large companies in the last couple of days that have done some dealing with Chicago, if I told you the inner workings of how it actually worked, I probably wouldn't have the show anymore, and two, you'd be shocked. I mean, you probably wouldn't be shocked, but you would actually be shocked that the jokes are real. Like what goes on is actually real. So it's not surprising to me that Chicago is creating a challenge for this, but you're right. This is a show about the future. And, you know, I think it's interesting for us because we're right smack dab in the middle of it. And this is, to me, really cool because it's a great equalizer, right? The challenges we have here makes it so that the building's namesake for which we're sitting, the Tribune Tower, they're trying to figure this out, like NBC behind them and WGN in front of them and us. We're all in the same game right now. And,
right.
And the price of acquisition for the tech is the same for everybody, and it's not even that much. It's how good can you execute.
Yeah, I think that's why a lot of older companies get threatened by some younger people.
Yeah, they freak out.
The playing field has been evened in a lot of ways.
For sure. It's totally, I mean, we were just talking about this random kid that was, he was on Technori Showcase on Tuesday, which was amazing, by the way. Thomas Ma from Sapphire Apps, who's been on the show. Dude has a network of 12.5 million people. A year ago, he was a student at UIC and was like...
He
was polishing nails.
Literally. Yeah.
Literally polishing nails to make ends meet. And now he's got 12 million people that he can access on an app network. That's crazy.
Yeah, but Justin made the other point, our first guest, about how professionalism will stand out.
Yes. I think it matters.
Even though there's the even playing field, I think we still live in a place where a lot of times the cream will rise to the top.
That is one of the biggest reasons in the sales pitch that I made to you and the rest of the team when we first started talking about doing these... live stream stuff is the fact that ultimately we want to force everybody into a live stream world because that's where we can dominate. We know that our skills and abilities can be at a certain level where others cannot. And if we can perform under the pressure and the tightness of time and under instant gratification and everything else we have to do, if we can compete at that level and others can't, that's your defense mechanism.
Yeah, baby.
Very cool. Sean, thank you so much.
Thanks,
as
man.
Always, you know, check us out on Facebook and Twitter at Technori. Follow me at Katoon. Sean Freilich, you can follow him at Freilich Sean, correct?
Yeah, you got it.
Freilich Sean. Boom, that's a wrap, guys. We'll see you next week.